Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, Stephen. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for the time, as always. Let's get to it. Lots of games to talk about. We will start with Missouri because they played last night. They won by 19 at home over Miami, Ohio. But I'm more interested in getting your thoughts on what was a nice road victory over Central Florida, because that ended the 36-game road losing streak for the Missouri Tigers. And then we see Central Florida go to Alabama over the weekend and win at Alabama. So, and you said Central Florida is not an easy team to play. And so it feels like that down the road is going to be a nice win for the resume.
Yeah, but even it's not even really about that, Stephen, because, I mean, honestly, Central Florida is not going to, they're probably not a tournament team. What it is it's a win that shows how resilient you are and how tough you are. Because you can't be yourself there. You can't play the way you play for, in that case, Taco Fall played 27 minutes, so I'm not a mathematician, but that's what about 60% of the game, maybe 65. You can't be who you are. He takes that away from you. At both ends of the floor, you have to be different. And so you, just as Kansas had to be different in the Syracuse game, this messes you up even more so, because everything you run is naturally designed to create either a shot at the basket or almost everything everybody runs is designed to funnel traffic to the basket and score if you don't get any reaction, or to kick it back out if you get that reaction and all of a sudden guys are open on the perimeter. Well, they don't have to go because they got a 7-7 guy. So you can't score over him, and you can't get the action on the outside that you want because they don't dive because he's 7-7 and he doesn't need help. So it forces you to be different and be creative and be tough and be inventive. And look, you look at Mizzou. I mean, they didn't have a lot of opportunities to go to the foul line in that game. Only shot 8 free throws. They didn't beat UCF on the boards, which you wouldn't expect necessarily because rebounding changes as well. But they found a way to win, and I think that's a year ago. I mean, that wouldn't even have been a chance for them to go down and get that win. So I think it's a huge change in the Tigers' personality, and in a league that's going to be as competitive as the SEC has probably been, 20 years maybe, if not more, in a league that's going to be that competitive, you're going to need to be really tough and resilient on the road.
No, I'm with you, and so far in watching this team, even in that loss to West Virginia, I mean, the one outlier has been the loss at Utah when they were really never in it. I've been impressed with their toughness, their resiliency, just the way they have started to take on the personality of Konzo Martin. And so far, I don't see how. And all this with the Michael Porter Jr. saga continuing to unfold as he returned to the bench last night and sat with the team. But I mean, based on what this team was and what he's getting out of players that went through the last couple of years of nothing but losing, I've been very impressed with what I've seen so far with Konzo Martin.
Yeah, this is maybe, when he got the job, I wrote a column that sort of challenged him to start to improve as a coach, saying at one point in the column that he was better at getting jobs than doing them. I mean, this is his third high major stop. And he did some okay work, some nice work at Tennessee. They had a Sweet 16 season, but that season was an underachieving season prior to the tournament. I mean, don't forget that team played in the first four. And then the Cal team, they had a really nice regular season with Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rabb as freshmen. And then that team went into the tournament and bombed. So he hasn't been able to to put together consistency. And I think that that, you know, I think it was time for him to show that that he'd matured as a coach. And this was probably as big a challenge as he had. Initially, it seemed not to be that, because you expected to have one of the three or four most talented players in the country who could make differences for you along the way to get you through. But now they don't have that. So they have to be able to stay together and fight past the fact that they practiced. You know, they spent their entire preseason practice expecting they'd have a 25-point scorer on their bench. I mean, a guy who could get you 25 every night, and for all we know, he might have been able to average that. And now he's gone, and they never really had that, and they've been able to put together a 6-2 start with some pretty good wins. I'm very impressed by what he's doing and how the players are responding.
All right, Mike, let's move over to the Kansas Jayhawks. I was down in Miami watching them dismantle Syracuse's zone defense. They're going to face a very similar defense tonight at Sprint Center, as one of Jim Boeheim's proteges is coaching at Washington now. And in that game in Miami, Devontae Graham took over. He had 35 points in the game, which is back-to-back 35-point games. And so I've been checking with Chris Tyson at KU to see the last time a KU player has gone back-to-back 35-point or more games. He's back to 1964 and hasn't found one yet. We're almost certain Wilt Chamberlain did it multiple times. But we don't. Maybe nobody else. I mean, Danny Manning never did it. Sharon Collins, you know, Frank Mason, none of these guys ever did it. It just makes me wonder, like, what does this say about Devontae Graham, and is he going to be one of the next, quote-unquote, great, you know, Jayhawk players in memory?
Well, I mean, when the season began, we had him, I think we had him on our All-America first team, like, debating, and then ultimately nicked him down. He was, like, the last guy, if I remember correctly, to go down to the second team. Like, he was our sixth guy. So I don't think it says anything other than he's one of the six best players in the country, which is about what I expected. I mean, he's terrific. And when I went to see the Jayhawks practice when I visited you guys back in early October, he had a tremendous practice that day, and not really so much at the offensive end as at the defensive end. I mean, he was getting his hands on deflections and steals, and he's a terrific player, and it's great to see, because, you know, a lot of people just say go. You know, whenever you get a chance, go. If they're even going to give you, you know, bus fare, go. And sometimes it's like you don't understand. There's a difference between entering through the front door and entering through the back door or entering through the side door. There's a difference. They have an investment in you. And I think that Devontae Graham, with a year under his belt as a full-time point guard, showing that he can both distribute, which he's the last I checked, he was averaging around 8 assists a game, if not more, maybe 9. Which, you know, I mean, we don't get that very much in college hoops anymore at the high major level. That kind, you know, Bobby Hurley kind of numbers. And then he's also showing that he can score if that's what's required. And with Malik Newman having a tough night against the Syracuse zone, it didn't work for him. Missed all 6 of his threes. They needed points, and the fact that Devontae was able to deliver them is no surprise at all.
So Kansas actually has a few decent tests left in non-con play. Washington doesn't look to be any great shakes, but they're a Power 5 team. Then they play number 16 Arizona State, that is Arizona State. And then they play at Nebraska, who just got a top 25 win last night over Minnesota. But Kansas right now is ranked number 2 in the country, Mike. And I'm curious, you know, right there with them is Michigan State, whose only loss is to Duke. Does Kansas belong? Do you think, with the eye test, not looking at what they've done, but what they are as a team, are they one of the top 2-3 teams in the country in your mind?
How long have we been doing this show? How long have I been together with you guys?
A decade?
Almost a decade, right? Not, yeah. If not more.
Yeah.
Did you just ask me a poll question?
Well,
you did.
I'm not asking you if it matters. I'm just asking if they're really that good.
I mean, are they really that good? Yeah, I think there's no question about that. Now, what's I mean, are they the second best team in the country? I don't know. I mean, before last night, probably Texas A&M belonged in that spot more than KU did, but then they lost. So They're one of the teams. I mean, they are one of the best teams in the country. They are one of the teams that could win it if the circumstances go right for them. The thing that we worry about with KU at this point is that they're small. And I say that even though they've got a 7-foot center who's really big and powerful, but if he were to be out for any reason, injury or whatever, and I hate to, you know, put those suppositions out there, but it is, you know, for certain teams where depth is not a luxury at particular spots. For instance, I was talking on your sister station in Louisville last night, and I said that there's no team in America that can less afford even a short-term injury to a starter than Louisville, because they got five starters, and then they don't have a starter on the bench, and it's just not there. You know, KU had, on the perimeter, has a starter on the bench. They can do that. But on the inside, they've got just enough. And unless Billy Preston gets resolved, they have just enough. So they need health and or a positive resolution on that other item.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. All right, Mike, let's talk about Kansas State. Kansas State's next game coming up will be against Tulsa, and you could tell me what kind of test that might be. They did win on the road against Vanderbilt. Not great, but Vanderbilt is an SEC team, and it was a true road game. And so what do you think so far of Kansas State as they head into this their next game against Tulsa?
You know, I mean, I think look at the – you know, they've only played two and a half high majors, if you want to call George Washington sort of a borderline. And in those games, they won one on the road. Again, I think I talked about this last week, Steve, about the challenge of playing on the road at Vanderbilt because of the benches being on the ends of the floor. And it's a really, you know, for a lot of teams, even teams that are in the SEC and play there regularly, it's disorienting. And so to go there and win, even though Vandy's rebuilding, they've been competitive. Yeah, they haven't won very many, but you have to play to win. And so that's a great road win. And then the other high major game they played was against Arizona State, which fought its way into the top 25, by beating Xavier. I believe it was the night after that close game against K-State. So, I think that, to this point, K-State's done really well, done everything you could expect or hope. And honestly, now, you know, as they go through, you know, what they have left, Tulsa is not a team that should beat them. Or, you know, I mean, anybody can challenge you depending on how attentive you are and how sharp you are that night, but that's not a game that should be difficult. And then you have SEMO, and then, you know, it's kind of an interesting road game at Washington State before Christmas, because it's a long pain in the butt trip. And Washington State has been just good enough at times. I mean, they have wins over St. Mary's and San Diego State, but they also have a really weird loss to Cal Davis. So I don't really know what to expect from that, but I think that would be a game where, you know, especially that close to Christmas, Bruce really has to get those guys locked in to, you know, like, okay, you get 9 days after this to think about Christmas and your time off and everything else. But if you get this win, you know, the Wildcats go into the league, you know, presumably at that point close to 11-1. So that will be a very interesting circumstance for them. But if they pay attention to take care of business, they should go to Washington State at 10-1. And then that would be a real great opportunity for them to enter the league in great shape.
Hey, Mike, before we let you go, I want to shift gears real quick because you have a unique perspective on something that that I find very interesting, and some of our listeners will. Being a guy who has been a Columbus Crew supporter yourself and a guy who spent a lot of time living in Cincinnati, right now the four teams that have a chance at getting an expansion team in MLS are presenting their cases to Major League Soccer today. And Cincinnati is one of those markets, while at the same time, Columbus is in the situation where they might possibly lose their franchise because their owner wants to move them to Austin, Texas. I'm just curious, because I think a lot of our fans in Kansas City, the sporting fans, are interested in this situation. What do you make of what's happening in Columbus and in Cincinnati all at the same time?
You know, I as someone who has gone to, you know, I haven't made the trip since 2015 for a game, for a crew game. It's a little farther from here than it was from Cincinnati, but for, you know, for 11 years, I guess, 13 years, from 2002 to 2014, I went almost every year for at least one game, and I think, and then in 2008 when they won the championship, I also went to their conference final against Chicago, and it's been frustrating for me as someone who embraced that team to say, look, I'm here 90 minutes away, and I can get there, and you're 10 minutes away, and you can't. And I mean, you turn on the television all the time, and you know now their fans are saying, oh, we didn't do that badly. And look, they have a great group of, I don't know, maybe 8,000 to 10,000 at most fans that are really passionate and as good of fans as anybody's got in any sport. They're great. But there's no second level. It doesn't exist. I mean, it's those 10,000 people, and then there's no, okay, why don't we go to a soccer game tonight, people? It doesn't happen. Columbus is a very unusual sports town in that, although I think the Blue Jackets have done a little better lately because they got good. They had a lot of years when the Blue Jackets situation was somewhat similar to the Crews in that you just couldn't get people to get interested. I mean, they are really passionate about Ohio State football, and they will talk and obsess about Ohio State football 365 days a year, taking no days off. And the other sports in town really struggle to get any oxygen away from that supply. And so it's disappointing and frustrating to see the way it's being handled. I do not endorse, especially at the league level. The ownership has a right to an extent to try to do what they can do to figure out what's the best situation for them, especially in a market that's been fairly difficult to move. And the ownership has not done a lot of good things in terms of the way they've related to the fan base. Their TV deal was really bad for a while and some other things like that. But the stadium's still there. The tickets aren't that expensive. You know, on a nice night, there's no reason why, especially because the team's been very competitive. On a nice night, there's no reason why they shouldn't be coming close to filling that place, and they're not. And so from the ownership standpoint, I have less problem than the league being, you know, has not really fought back at all, you know, and publicly said, you know, let's try to work this out. What can we do better? What, you know, can we try to get Columbus to get on board, et cetera? I don't think the league has been really a shining example in that respect. You know, the Cincinnati thing, I lived there for 18 years, and I, you know, if I saw anybody passing me on the way to those crew games, it would have shocked me. I had no idea that there was any soccer interest in that city at all. I mean, other than the obvious, you know, playing and, you know, participating populace. But I had no idea there were any soccer fans in Cincinnati, and they have responded in a dreamlike fashion. And if the MLS does not see that that's a market they absolutely 100% should be in tomorrow, then they're even more clueless than the Columbus, the Save the Crew people are saying.
Mike, thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, fellas, thanks.
That is Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Back after this on WHB.